Have you been injured at work and need help getting the benefits you deserve? Call me, attorney Steve Marte, at 312-312-HURT for a free consultation. That's 312-312-HURT. I will personally handle your claim from start to finish. Call me, Steve Marte, today.
This hour is brought to you by Xfinity. Get the speed, coverage, and control you need with Xfinity X5.
You're listening to Waddle and Sylvie. Live from the First Midwest Bank, a division of Old National Bank, State Street Studio. This is ESPN 1000.
WMVP, WSHE HD2, Chicago.
A Good Karma Brands radio station.
Final, they lost. They got crushed by the Reds today. What was the final?
20-5.
20-5.
You know what? These two bad teams split a four-game set, right? Wasn't it 2-2? Is that how it ended?
Yeah. The Cubs started out well, then playing
David
better
Ross
baseball.
Got ejected again in this game.
Did he twice? For what now?
Same thing.
Same stuff?
Yeah, when they hit Willie, he came out and he wanted to let everyone know that he didn't think this was the right way to do things.
Sox, Red Sox tonight. We'll have Len Casper in an hour from now.
Well, that's an up and down ride all year, hasn't it?
Yeah,
Ben?
Yeah. Jake Berger had that big swing yesterday. That was
the extent of it.
Yeah. Giolito pitched himself in and out of trouble in the end. Pitched well, but Stoney was pointing out that he made it hard on himself from time to time. But yeah, you win, and that was a good thing after that first game because
Sox left a lot of guys on base, but the Red Sox, that is, the White Sox pitchers were able to get out of some precarious situations.
Yes. 312-332-3776. You could tweet me if you've got a Bears question for Mark Potash. Here's my question. Cap brought that we were bringing this up yesterday with Cap, and we talked about it in their pre-show meeting. We've talked a lot about this, and it's happening in more and more games. Andrelton Simmons pitched for the Cubs today. He allowed 5 runs in the bottom of the 8th inning. 4 or 5, something like that. You were the first, I think, to bring this up last year in the Mercedes situation. Because you can't swing on 3-0 when a position player is pitching. Every night now when I tune into the highlight shows, it seems like there's one team that has a position player pitching because they don't want to burn another arm.
That wasn't the case early in the year because nobody was scoring runs, but now that it's gotten warm outside, you've seen some blowouts for sure.
And Cap asked the question, should there be a slaughter rule? I don't think there should be a slaughter rule, but should there be a white towel being thrown? Should there be an option in baseball that you say, look, we're down 15-4. We give. You save your pitchers, we'll save ours. Or should they still find a way to manage their way through 3 more innings and it could have an impact on them down the road?
Like, I'm not for a slaughter rule. I'm just not for you being red-assed if, in fact, somebody swings 3-0 and they've got a 15-run lead. If you're going to throw a position player, then you I don't want to see you get angry about somebody swinging at a 3-0 pitch. Throw.
You don't think there should be a towel thrown in?
No.
Like instead of David Ross today throwing Andrelton Simmons, what was it? Was it 15-5?
Yeah.
When he came in, he allowed 5.
Yeah.
And just say, look, we'd rather not play the bottom of the 8. We're done. Or is that?
Well, if that's the case, you could quit at any point.
Yes. You could quit.
I don't think that's what
for the
we want.
Children,
I don't care about the children. How about the gamblers? I just think that I just don't think that's the way you want to do business.
It's a good point too. And people did bring up yesterday. I forgot about this. That let's say you give up early and you're hosting a game. You know, it cuts off like if it's before the 7th or food and drink and different things with the ballpark being shut down a little earlier.
You don't want that.
Yeah. So I guess you got to play now.
Yeah, I mean, look, again, the only thing that I say, I thought it was ridiculous last year for anyone to be mad about somebody swinging at a 3-0 pitch when you're pitching a position player.
Yeah.
You have punted on your
you don't get to make the rules
to be red-ass. Yes.
Potsy, Mark Potash from the Chicago Sun-Times covers everything, really. Specializes in the Bears. He's awesome at what he does. Potsy, should managers have a right instead of throwing position players to just give?
You know, I think they should just give out, juice boxes and orange slices as soon as the game is over. As long as they've gone Little League enough, they might as well have a slaughter rule.
You don't believe that, Potsy?
No, I don't. But to me, I'm old school guy. It's the whole quickening of the game. This is all born out of pitchers only able to go 4 and 5 innings, and you've got to save everybody. And I just think it's a negative development for the game in general that has led us to these things where you got these blowouts, and now you got to save pitchers. So should there be a slaughter rule? Probably not. How about just managing the game a little bit better? And I remember seeing pitchers, position players pitch. I saw Larry Bittner pitch on July 4th, 1977, I think it was. But that was such a rarity. Now it happens, 10, 12 times a season.
Oh,
so it has happened in the past,
yeah.
But it happens more and more. I just think it's a negative development for the game. I don't know what the solution is, but I sure wish they would allow pitchers, condition pitchers to pitch more, the starters. I think that would stop some of the problems they have with player availability that have necessitated all these roster, things that they're doing.
Potsy, have we reached peak disparity between the popularity of the NFL and Major League Baseball? Like, I mean, has there ever been a wider gap between the ultimately popular NFL and the moderately popular, just with older folks like you and me and Sylvie, Major League Baseball?
Yeah, I think so. Both games have changed, and I think I say the same thing about all sports. I think athleticism in all sports has reached a point of diminishing returns where it's getting to be a negative. Pitchers throwing so hard that batters have to guess. To me, that has made a hit-or-miss game at baseball. I don't like that. Football is such the athleticism, the size, the speed, it's made it you can't play the game the way we used to see it. But yet, football at least, I don't know, maybe it's gambling, whatever, I don't know. But football is, you're right, yeah, football maintains its popularity. It will always, I think it will always be here, even though they're changing. And I think you're right. I think we are seeing a bigger disparity than ever between the two games.
Mark Potash joining us from the Chicago Sun-Times. It's Waddle and Sylvie. Let's go to the Bears that you've covered for many years. What has been your biggest general takeaway since this new regime has taken over?
I think this is the most refreshing rebuild we've seen since the end of the Ditka era. In other words, whenever there's been a new guy come in, whether it's been a GM or whatever, it's always been kind of herky jerky. When Phil Emery came in, he inherited Lovey, and then when Trestman came in, they tried to keep Lovey's defense, and then when Fox came in they inherited Jay Cutler, but they had to rebuild their defense. So with Ryan Pace, I mean. So now I call this a clean rebuild. I think this is good. I know people are a little uneasy about the way they've cleaned out the roster. I think this is good. They are starting over on offense. They are starting over on defense, and they have a young quarterback. They don't, so you don't even have a Cutler to kind of get in the way. So I think it's not going to be an easy season, but I think it has a clear path. And I think at this point in time, I think that's as good as you can hope for the way the Bears have gone over the last 10 years.
I couldn't agree with you more, Potsy. I think that this is refreshing for an organization in their front office to actually look at themselves and say, hey, we're not all that. We're going to start this. It's going to be slow. It's going to be deliberate. And it's going to be complete. With that in mind, do you believe, are you someone that does believe that progress can be made, especially at the quarterback position, when there isn't a plethora of talent at this point in the offensive huddle?
Yeah, I think you can, as long as it's very hard. The reason it's hard to tank in the NFL is because you still have to protect your quarterback. And I think that is the biggest trick the Bears will have to play this year is still developing all these players and new and young players. You're going to have a ton of rookies until they get, and still be able to protect your quarterback and give him a chance. And I think you can do that because I think I guess a lot of it is blind faith. I mean, I just think Ryan Poles is not going to let an offensive line guy is not going to allow his offensive line to be so bad that he'll hang him out to dry, the quarterback out to dry, like they did last year with Fields. I don't know, because you look at the players they have, and you think you got 2 second-year guys, you've got basically one veteran starter. It's hard to say, but you know, offensive line historically is one of those things where where the whole is greater than the sum of their parts. So I mean, it has to be that way, and it was that way. You talk about guys coming from Green Bay and Lucas Patrick and Luke Getsy, and that offensive line. Now I know they have the best quarterback of all time behind them. That sort of makes it easy. But you look at that offensive line; they piece things together pretty well, and still get not only had a good quarterback but had a good running game. And I think I would think based on that. I think the Bears can put together a good enough offensive line and be inventive enough with everything they have to at least allow themselves to develop a quarterback and still lose games. And as I pointed out before, that's a key trick. You know, it's a key trick is to be able to get that high draft pick, that second draft pick, and then still develop your quarterback. I always point to the Colts in '99 when they had Peyton Manning. You know, they were in three games, but he only got sacked 22 times. It was the second fewest in the whole league, and that was Peyton Manning, who was never very mobile, and yet they still were able to get Edgerrin James, and then they were off to the races. And it happened even with, you look at Joe Burrow and Ja'Marr Chase, you know, when they, you know, he got hurt, but they're still able to have a quarterback that they could develop, and then the next thing you know, they're in the Super Bowl. That, to me, is what the templates the Bears are looking at, is having a not-so-great season, 4, 5, 6 wins, still developing a quarterback, and then using the draft capital, which is theoretically a top 5 pick, and all the salary cap space, which is going to be pretty massive relative to what they have this year, and then really start year, have kind of another rookie season for Poles in year 2, but with a much brighter future.
So Potsy, you think that better coaching will lead to being able to deal with Larry Borum and Tevin Jenkins as your starting tackles who are young and still developing and we don't know much about?
Yeah, I'm not saying that's going to happen. I'm saying that can happen with what we've experienced. You know, the Bears. Now, I like Matt Nagy, but I just think he was just a total failure as an offensive coach. I know a lot of people don't agree with that, but I just think that's a huge difference. And what I think it's kind of scarred everybody, and rightfully so, but I think we've seen the worst version of almost every player in that offense. So you might actually have more than you think, is what I'm saying. And a good coaching staff can make more of that. And I think that's the, again, blind faith, yes, but, you know, what else do we have to grasp at this point in time?
I like it, and like the benefit of the doubt, but yet I'm also scarred, and some other fans are too, where Potsy and you just mentioned how you like that this is a clean rebuild. But you know that after Lovie and Lovie's ways, where he wasn't very personable and he wasn't very outgoing, that we're like, ooh, Trestman, he's a breath of fresh air and he's offensive minded. And then when Trestman wasn't the leader of men, then we're like, now we got our true leader. This is Football Foxy. He's always been a pro's pro. He's gotten to 2 Super Bowls. Then we're like, Foxy's kind of past his time and he doesn't have much of a roster. He's like, so Nagy is so refreshing and he's a young and up and coming and he wears a visor and stuff like that. Do you know what I mean? Like, we kept banking on the next guy being better, but they've all been sort of guys who have had their faults as well. Why do you think Matt Eberflus will break that trend?
Well, actually, I don't know. Matt Eberflus' biggest strength right now is that he's not Matt Nagy. Yeah, that's exactly what you've said, right, Sylvie? That you're always, but you know, it's always better after you've had some kind of disaster. So, no, I don't know. There are certain things I like about Eberflus just off the what I've seen. I like the fact that he, the polar opposite of Nagy, is that even though he came in as a defensive coach, he's already pretty much given the control of the defense to Alan Williams, and he's made that very, and he's done it very smoothly. He hasn't done it awkwardly like he's had, you know, like Nagy giving up play calling or things. You know, he's done it very smoothly, and I think that's a good thing. I think he really wants to be a good head coach of the team instead of just like either a CEO or just the head of the defense. And so to me, that's a good sign. I don't know anything about Luke Getsy. You know, he came from Green Bay where he had a great quarterback, and who knows. So a lot of these ways you don't know. But I think there are certain things I see, small indicators about Poles and Eberflus that at least give some indication that they might be better. That said, we were more, I'm telling you, we were more enthused with Ryan Pace at this point in 2015 than we are with Ryan Poles now. That is, I looked at it, I remember it, I lived it. It's the absolute truth. We thought Kevin White had not been hurt yet, and he was going to be a big hit, and John Fox was exactly what the Bears needed. It was a perfect marriage. I mean, it was in a long way of saying it. So we really don't know, but I do like at least the Eberflus. I like the fact that two things. I like the fact that he's being absolutely objective about what he's got to I wouldn't say annoying degree, but just disconcerting degree where. You know, no Hicks, no James Daniels, no Mack, Jalen Johnson on the second team. He has not gushed about anybody except maybe Darnell Mooney. Even Roquan didn't even embrace Roquan, who was like the one guy he had in Indy. I mean, you know, like, so he's been totally objective. I like that. I think that's a good sign. It doesn't mean he'll be successful because he could be totally different on Sundays. That's a big factor too. But I like that. And I just like the fact that he's not really coming in as a defensive guy. He's coming in as more of a head coach. Those are two things I think that at least are indicators that, hey, if they are good, they will be able to sustain success, which the other guy could not do.
Potsy, when you look at the quarterback situation, how do you interpret what they're saying about Justin right now? And I know it's very early. How do you feel they feel about Justin? And secondly, what did you make? You mentioned Jalen Johnson. What did you make of them announcing that he was running some of practice on the second team?
Yeah, well, technically they didn't announce it. We just kind of saw it. But I don't know what to make of it. Just the fact that here's a guy who missed part of the introductory mini camp, and maybe he's got they're having everybody start at the bottom. I mean, to us, this is our perspective is different from theirs. To us, Jalen Johnson's like the second or third best player on the team, the most accomplished player on the team. To them, he's a guy who doesn't. Maybe to them, he's a guy who makes plays but doesn't make plays on the ball. You know, whatever. Not as good as we think he is. You know what I'm saying? So. I'm only guessing that he has to earn it, and it's either that or they want to see a guy like Kendall Vildor play with the first team and see what they got in him. Who knows? You know, maybe they know what they've got in Jalen Johnson. They won't explain it. It won't matter until we get to training camp. But yeah, right now, they can say it's not a big deal, and maybe it's not. But I guess to me, it's just an indication of just how objective they're being about what they inherited.
And how do you think they feel about Fields?
I think they're waiting to see on Fields. I mean, that's the same thing. You know, that would normally when a guy would come in, that would be somebody you would gush about. Hey, I took this job because we've got this quarterback who I think can be great. They didn't say that. I think that was a little off-putting, I think, at first for me. But I think it's now that I think about it, I think it's good because he hasn't proven anything. And again, we saw him in the worst version of him. In the Nagy offense, I think most people agree with that. And now they're going to see what they got. So in other words, they're not totally married to this guy. Where even if it's not working, they're going to stay with it. If they have to move on, they will move on, and they will have the ability to do that in draft capital and salary cap space to do things like that. So I think they're wait and see. They want to see just what they've got. They don't know. Nobody knows.
Potsy, has he passed the eye test, or is there not enough of a test to even pass?
Who, Fields?
Yes, when you've seen him.
Oh, it's way, way, way too early. There's too many things that he's good at that you don't see in shorts and shells or just shorts. Or, you know what I'm saying? You don't see in mini camps. And there's just too far to go. All I know is the only thing I know is based on what I've seen is if you put him in a position to be good, he will be good. I think I still stick to that, even though Mitch is kind of pushing back on the instinct thing, that I think his football quarterback instincts for the position are still much better than Trubisky's, and I think not so much that he can take a bad team and make it good, but I think he can take a good team and make it great. So I think he's got that ability. So I'm encouraged by that. But to answer your question, no, I don't think we see near enough. There's too many intangibles that are going to make this guy as good as we think that we just have no way of knowing at this point in time because he hasn't been given a chance.
Are they trading Quinn?
I'll be honest, I have no idea. I think they would like to. I think if they could. But the problem is, in this day and age, and maybe in any day and age, even a guy like that who is as productive as he is, you just can't get enough for him to make it worth it. And so we'll see. I think they have enough faith in their defense. You know, this is a defense. Eberflus's defense has been one that has really still rushed the passer without name big, you know, double-digit sack guys, or, you know, it's made them more than inherited them. And I think they would be fine if he were not on their team. I don't think he's like a guy they feel like they have to have. So I guess, what to answer your question, I think if they can trade him, I think they will.
Potsy, great stuff. We appreciate you.
Thanks. Potsy.
Good talking to you guys, as always. Have a great day.
There you go. Mark Potash from the Chicago Sun-Times. He was covering the Bears back when I was on the Bears in the mid-90s into the 2000s, and he's still asking
the tough questions.
He's
the most tenured everyday
Big Z's
member
been
of the
there
staff.
For a while, too, okay. So like continuously, because I know Potsy covered some other beats in there as well. Big Z may be the most, like,
did I hear Potsy covering the White Sox recently too?
Yes, he was filling in for Daryl. Okay. For the sign. Potsy does everything.
Yeah,
that's what makes him great. Potsy's been an editor. Potsy covers baseball. He's covered hockey. He's covered hoops. He covers football.
He's
now
got a nice snarky personality at times as well, which makes him endearing.
Yes. 332-3776. Lost one of the greats today. This happened during Unhinged too. We will tell you about that coming up next.
You're listening to Waddle and Sylvie.
ESPN 1000 and now on FM at 100.3 HD2.
This is Chicago's home for sports.
You're a big cop.
Really funny. Really funny.
What do you mean I'm funny?
It's funny, you know. It's a good story. It's funny. You're a funny guy.
What do you mean? You mean the way I talk? What?
You're just funny. It's funny, you know, the way you tell the story and everything.
Funny how? I mean, what's funny about it?
Tommy, no, you got it all wrong.
Oh, Anthony. He's a big boy. He knows what he said. What'd you say?
You're right.
Funny how? What?
Just, you know, you're funny.
You mean, let me understand this, because maybe it's me, I'm a little up, maybe. But I'm funny how? I mean, funny like I'm a clown, I amuse you. I make you laugh. I'm here to f***ing amuse you. What do you mean funny? Funny how? How am I funny?
I'm not just... You know how you tell a story? What?
No, I don't know. You said it. How do I know? You said I'm funny. How the f*** am I funny? What the f*** is so funny about me? Tell me. Tell me what's funny.
Get the f*** out of here, Tommy.
I almost had him. I almost had him. Stuttering prick. Yeah. Frankie, was he shaking? I wonder about you sometimes, Henry. You may fold under questioning.
That's right. Ray Liotta passed away today at 67 years young.
That's one of the most iconic movie scenes inside an iconic movie itself. Isn't that one of the most memorable scenes you can remember not to be redundant,
over
the last...
Can you give me, how many scenes can you name that are more quotable even to this day, 32 years later? That was 1990 for Goodfellas?
Yes.
Joe Pesci in the scene?
You know, and that scene was actually partially improvised by Joe Pesci.
Really?
He told Martin Scorsese that he had an idea about a story that he wanted to play off of Ray Liotta, but he wanted Ray Liotta's reaction to be authentic. So the first, you know, I don't know how many takes they did of it, but the initial time they did it, it was kind of the first time Ray Liotta was actually hearing it as it was playing out.
Make you laugh funny how, funny like a clown. Like, yeah. How many people will say that even still 32 years later when someone makes a comment, you're funny?
I heard that actually happened to Joe Pesci, like when he was growing up. It was so, like, because he grew up around those kinds of characters, I guess. And so that's based on an actual interaction he's had.
Yeah. I mean, what can you guys come up with? Like, I'm sure there are many, if you did a Google search, many lists of the most quotable lines in movies. Like,
you know what I'm going to do? I'm going to have most famous movie quotes.
See, that's different. Like, It's where...
Yeah, because frankly, my dear, I don't give a damn.
Right, right.
From like, Gone with the Wind.
It's not being used. Like, I know there's a list that you could say are famous, the most famous or the most well-known, but I'm saying, like, quoted. What are still the most quoted movie lines ever?
That's a good...
Do you know what I mean? Like many that's what made Seinfeld so relatable, is that even...
By the way, Seinfeld, I was asking Merkin yesterday as well. Went off the air in 98? Is that right?
98. And it's hard to believe. 24 years later,
yeah.
People still quote many scenes from Seinfeld in everyday life. So it's not like the most famous quote, but this is still, it's both. Because Goodfellas, for most people who are my age, has Goodfellas top 10 in their least. It's the poll question. Many people responded, it's top 5 for me. Many people said, it's my favorite movie. So it had it all. It had the ensemble cast. It had the incredible story that it told.
Yeah.
It had memorable lines.
Based on a true story.
And so Ray Liotta, if you're just getting into your car, Ray Liotta passed away in the Dominican Republic. He was filming a movie, and he went to bed. There was nothing. He died in his sleep. He was filming a movie and never woke up. Just 67 years old, you know, and I said in Crosstalk today, it's scary, like Bob Saget. Saget was out the night before, wasn't he? And didn't he do, he either did an act or he was out, he was on the
road. There was a thought that he hit his head, I think he did, but yeah, he didn't wake up.
The blunt trauma and what it does that some people don't even know. He may have hit his head on the, you know, on the wall by the bed. He may have hit his head on the shower somewhere and thought nothing of it. Oh, and there's no blood, I don't think I'm hurt in any way. And then you go to bed and you don't wake up. It's crazy. So we found this out right when we started recording Crosstalk Unhinged. So when, you know, if you're looking for original content tonight or into the holiday weekend, you'll get our initial reaction on Crosstalk Unhinged. Also, too, one of the side stories about a Chicago sports story with Ray Liotta that we talked a lot about in Crosstalk Unhinged that got us into a Mark Grace comparison with Paul Konerko is when Mark Grace was married to his first wife, Ray Liotta went to a Cubs game and met Michelle Grace. And
that relationship at one point blossomed into a marriage.
Into a marriage. And that Mark Grace and Michelle Grace got divorced, and then Ray Liotta, like, they're going to watch Mark Grace play baseball. You know, not together. They met at the game, I guess. The next thing you know, Mark Grace is single.
What would you, so it's in your, is it in your top five?
Yes.
Is it?
Yes. Goodfellas. I mean, we call our dinners because of the groups and the people and the laughs that they had. And we called our guys' dinners still Goodfellas dinners.
I think Goodfellas is the movie I've probably watched the most.
Like I've been mentioning for the last several days, you and I, ironically enough, both watched it on Saturday.
On TNT. Yeah. And can I tell you, there's not...
I haven't seen it in a while.
Oh, really?
I watched it this past
Even
Saturday.
Even with the commercials you're watching?
Yeah.
Do they edit it still?
Yeah, they edit it still. Oh. Yeah. No. But here's the thing. It's so good, and it's not as good edited, silly, but it's so good. It's a movie that it doesn't matter if it's on, it's running, even if it's on TNT, and it's not going to give me, you know, all the blue language that I want, I will still find myself watching at least 10 or 15 minutes of it time and time again.
Yeah. You want an odd...
Stop and watch.
Here's an odd factoid about this movie. Scorsese's first film on this list, I think it comes in at number 19 on this Hollywood Reporter list. It made the record books by dropping the F-bomb more than any other movie up till then, over 300 times. It was surpassed the year that The Wolf of Wall Street came out,
which is another great movie.
569 times.
Wolf of Wall Street is another stop and watch movie.
Yes.
Anytime, any station, no matter what mood you're in, you find out it's on, you're like, I'm going to stop and watch 20 minutes of this.
There were so many good scenes in Goodfellas. You know, even in really good movies, there's throwaway scenes. I can't remember many throwaway scenes in Goodfellas. Like, they took you on a ride that was thrilling the entire time. Yeah.
Wild ride.
And the performances, unbelievable.
The other thing with Ray Liotta, too, is Field of Dreams that everyone talks about. Mitch and Bartlett, who DM'd me on Instagram, said that you know, the stat that's going around is that Ray Liotta never saw
right
Field of Dreams. He never watched it all the way through. Do you know why? He and this guy Mitch knows everything about everything. And I trust him. Like, I haven't even Googled this to make sure this
is right.
Well,
he wasn't a big baseball guy, right?
Bartlett Mitch tells me on Instagram, someone could cross-check this, Charlie, see if he's right. But I trust Mitch that he was sitting down to watch it, and his mom was going through a lot of health problems. And when they put it on to watch with his mom could never get comfortable, and they never finished the movie. And then thus, when he lost his mom, he could never go back to that movie because it reminded him too much of the tough times he went through with his mom.
Interesting.
Isn't it?
Yeah.
That one of the great movies in Field of Dreams, in the Field of Dreams game, the White Sox just played in, the Cubs are going to be in. But yeah, some people have called in. I think this is a really good one. Chris and Crest Hill, as far as what is the most recited movie line in conversations, even still to this day. Not most famous movie line, but still used in everyday language. Chris has a good one in Crest Hill.
You want answers? I want the truth. You can't handle the truth.
That's
one of my all-time favorites.
The you can't handle the truth is recited all the time whenever the word truth comes up. You want the truth? You can't handle the truth.
I thought you 100%. Said all right, Spider.
That's what
I appreciate it. Appreciate you guys having me on.
Thanks, Chris.
Isn't the line at the end of an Unhinged from the movie?
Yes. Yeah. Tommy, go blank yourself. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Oh yeah. It's a classic movie. Like I said, there are really no lulls in that movie for me. And I was reminded of that when I watched it this weekend. It's one of those movies too that you don't mind sitting through some commercials.
Yeah,
you'd prefer not to, but I mean,
on like a DVR or like even?
I was sitting at my desk, just reading things on the computer in my office, and it was a morning.
I know.
Because I was watching that. I was watching a soccer game at one point as well, and I finally ditched the soccer game and I stayed on Goodfellas.
Do you have a favorite scene? Is it the funny like a clown? That's the most quotable. I don't know if that's my favorite scene.
There's some good.
I like when the Lufthansa.
The good violence.
The Lufthansa thing happens.
Heist. And then Lufthansa heist.
Yes. And they're all celebrating in the bar afterwards.
Yes.
And then different guys come in. And Jimmy.
Yeah, Robert De Niro.
It starts to get pissed at everyone because they told them all, don't buy anything to draw any attention to you.
He takes the one Goodfellas fur coat.
Yes.
Takes it from his wife.
Take the Cadillac back.
The pink Cadillac.
Yeah. I thought that was a really good part of the scene as well.
Another good, and we were talking about this in Unhinged. Like, this is probably in the, just like Ray Liotta was a part of that scene, where it's a very quotable scene, even to this day, make you laugh. What am I, funny like a clown? That amongst the most uncomfortable movie scenes ever was in Hannibal, when Ray Liotta was getting his brain fed to him.
Correct. Yes. Yes. Hannibal.
I forgot about most of that movie.
Listen, Silence of the Lambs is so much
of course
more superior to Hannibal. However, because Anthony Hopkins played the role of Hannibal so well, watching the movie Hannibal is still fun. And like you said, Sylvie, that scene in itself is just, that's actually the one thing that's memorable from the movie.
Right. I saw that in the movie theater because we were all very excited to see that. And I haven't seen that scene in many years because it's not a movie that you really go back and watch. I still remember the reaction of the crowd. One could believe what they were seeing. And I got to see if that scene goes on like I remember. Wasn't Hannibal, like his brain, his head was
exposed.
Cut open.
Yes, yeah. Correct.
And he was numbed up, and he was spooning out bits of his brain and feeding it to him?
Correct, yes. You remember it pretty well. That's how it
very
made
gross.
An impact.
Because it was like...
And then, you know, and he gets... It's interesting, like, the one for Ray Liotta, his career is clearly defined by Goodfellas. And is, you know, and I know Carmen talked about this a lot today on Carmen and Yurko. You know, because it was so good, a lot of his other movies people look at and they're a little bit disappointed, right? But in terms of as a character actor and just to have that one, even if it's just that one character on your resume, is unbelievable. One of the greatest movies of all time.
Life-changing for him. I will say this. He played his role quite well in the Many Saints of Newark.
I thought that
movie was so bad. It was such a letdown for me. And I don't know if I'm alone in that feeling, but it was very underwhelming because
we were all so excited to see it. After all those years, here we were going to get the prequel, and it's with Gandolfini's son who's playing his character. And I'm with you. One of my takeaways from the movie was I seem to remember that Ray Liotta was one of the, that he did well in that movie. He didn't have a large role, but he did pretty well, didn't he?
Yes.
Did he play the father? Someone's father?
I think so. I think you're correct you're right. I mean, it was not a memorable movie as much as I was hoping it would be.
All right, if you want to weigh in on the conversations as far as like the memorable factors, the Hannibal scene, I told you one of the more, if not from a movie that you would ever say was a great movie, but just one of the weirdest scenes I've ever seen, the most memorable quotes from Goodfellas. Ray Liotta passed away today at the age of 67. If you want to add to the conversation, 332-3776. And then we'll talk to Len Casper coming up at 5.
You're listening to Waddle and Sylvie on ESPN 1000.
Chicago's home for sports.
Follow at Waddle and Sylvie and at TWaddle87 on Twitter.
Can I come back again?
Yeah. I built this for you.
There are others, you know. There were 8 of us. It really mean a lot to them.
Yeah. Anytime. They're all welcome here.
Yeah, Ray Liotta passed away today at the age of 67.
Can I make a revelation that's probably going to take me, people aren't going to be happy about? I was not a huge Field of Dreams guy.
Someone recently said that too. Not on the station, I think nationally someone, I don't know where it was that someone said that they weren't a Field of Dreams person either.
I enjoyed it when I saw it. I do not seek it out, nor do I, if I see it scrolling through the guide, I don't settle in for it.
I'm more of a Major League / Hoosier sports movie guy.
Yeah. Give me Bull Durham in terms of Kevin Costner baseball
too,
movies.
Yeah. Give me Bull Durham any day over
like if
that.
If I'm scrolling and I see Gladiator, I'm staying for at least a half hour every time.
Field of Dreams was really good, but it's not in my top list. Did anyone say 7 for their most quotable movies or movies that are still being quoted today? Charlie,
we didn't really get 7, but that What's in the box?
You always have the one dude at work whenever you get a package.
Yeah.
Waddle is the guy in our office.
I'm your guy, yeah.
What's in the box?
That's his wife. Oh, am I not allowed to say it?
It's so long ago.
Oh. It's a good one, though. That's a spoiler you don't want to put out
say,
there.
Yeah,
it's a movie worth watching.
I mean, it's been, like, that movie had to have been made in the 90s, right?
Yeah, but I think here's the point. Like Sylvie said, a lot of our listeners out there are, maybe they're Charlie's age or Tyler's age. They haven't actually seen Goodfellas or 7. It's a movie worth watching, and you don't want to spoil it for them.
Usual Suspects is another good one. Steve in Park Ridge. Hey, Steve, you're on ESPN 1000.
Hey, guys. How you doing today?
We're good.
Hey, I agree 100%. Field of Dreams is not a movie. If I'm just channel surfing, I stop and say, oh, I have to watch it. But the one line I just love from that movie when he's talking about Ty Cobb, and yeah, everybody wanted to come, but we never invited him because we never liked the SOB in the first place, so we told him to go stick it. I still think that's a great line.
Yeah. I mean, like, and if you build it, he will come is still quoted all the time about anything someone builds, right? Talk about the Bear Stadium, you know, people will still quote that movie. If you build it, they will come. Let's go to Chris in Tampa. Hey, Chris.
Gentlemen, thank you for taking my call. Sure. Great movie is The Godfather, and the best part of that is take the cannoli and leave the gun.
Do you use that in everyday language, though?
Yes, whenever somebody needs to take a form, take a paper, and all that, a lot of people that I work with were in our 50s and 60s, and somebody will say, "Hey, take those forms," and somebody will yell,
and leave the gun.
That's great. That's great.
What's in the box, Chris? What's in the box?
Well, I don't think more simple than that. Thanks, Chris.
See, I think actually I'm going to make him an offer he can't refuse is actually more quoted.
Yes, I agree with
that. Godfather.
Gene Greco would say that to us like on a weekly basis.
Yeah.
Jim in Oswego. Jimmy, you're on ESPN 1000. What's up?
Hey, gentlemen, love your show.
Thank you.
Thanks, Jim.
Very entertaining. But one of the best scenes from Goodfellas is when Joe Pesci's character is playing poker with De Niro and Carbone, and he thinks he's being slighted by the kid getting the drink, Spider, who is actually Chris, turned out to be Chris from The Sopranos later, and he shoots Chris in the foot because he's not moving fast enough, and then when Chris comes back and his foot's all bandaged up, he basically tells Pesci's character to go F himself, and then Pesci kills him.
Yep. Good stuff.
Yeah, but that was a great one.
Yep. It's an amazing movie.
It is fantastic. And the other scene that Meller and I were talking about that is, I think, is famous is the one where they go through from across the street, and they go through the nightclub, if it's the Copa or whatever.
Yeah, Copacabana, yes.
And it's I think Carmen has talked about it as being one of the longest single-shot scenes, one-camera single-shot scenes.
Like how they get in through the back door, and correct. They set up the table there up in front.
Yeah, there's no edit. It just, the camera follows them. It's one continuous shot.
You get the Goodfellas table.
And they actually, Martin Scorsese had, I believe, Ray Liotta and Lorraine, what's her?
Bracco,
thank you. Karen in the movie. He had them both like wander through the same hallway multiple times, and he followed him, like you said, Waddle, with the one camera, just to create length, to make it seem like it was a longer walk than it actually was at the club.
Lorraine Bracco tweeted, and remember, she was in The Sopranos for many years, and she wrote, "I am utterly shattered to hear this terrible news about my Ray. I can be anywhere in the world, and people will come up and tell me their favorite movie is Goodfellas. Then they always ask what was the best part of making that movie. My response has always been the same, Ray Liotta."
Nice. That's a hell of a tribute.
Yeah, yeah. And how many times did we make, is it the drug called Chantrix? Chantrix?
Chantrix.
Yeah. The commercial that he was on recently.
The anti-smoking.
Chantix, I think.
Chantix. Carmen had a good take on that today. We talked all about it. So Ray Liotta passed away at the age of 67. 332-3776. Len Casper's a guy who knows lines, and he just did the Field of Dreams game. We'll ask him about that. Then we'll talk Sox and how he took in the Donaldson TA story here in the last week. We'll talk with Len Casper next.